Good evening. I see we have some weary travelers back, and that we have some visitors, and we are certainly glad you've come our way. I think that that choosing certain topics, you know, just automatically makes for a statement of itself. Tonight's topic is cynicism, and so that we would never have cynicism in the church, would we? I want to begin with our scripture reading. It was James, the third chapter. And I'm going to begin in verse 13. And I want to ask what he asked. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds and the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. In a certain way, I could just close the book and say, let's dwell on that for a while, because there's a great deal there that is worthy of being thought about. But if you're like me, there's been a time in your life where you thought that someone is going to take advantage of me, or try to. Now, I don't know where we get those ideas, but I think that we have them. And so, I ask you the question, where did that come from? And more than likely, it comes from the fact that you have had a time when someone took advantage of you, or you felt that they did, and that they took unfair advantage in doing so. And so, we become defensive. And in our defensiveness, we begin to put up walls and barriers, okay, and that the idea that we are being a victim then, that I was taken advantage of and that I am a victim of whatever happened, is our conclusion. The word cynic means a fault-finding, captious critic, especially one who believes that human conduct is motivated wholly by self-interest. Now, I can't believe that we would think that men are interested in what they want instead of us and the betterment of all men. And yet, I believe that happens. I believe we have very good reason to think that way sometimes. And so, can we believe, though, that a Christian would act that way? Would a Christian ever be a cynic looking to satisfy themselves rather than the group? And I'm going to say, I don't even want to go there. I think that it happens and it could happen, but that's not how I think and it's not what I want to think. So, I don't go there. But then there's the sense, are we silent critics? Cynics. Meaning that what is going to be said, okay, that we think things that we don't talk about, but there are many forms of cynicism, and sometimes questioning is the proper response. But are we characterized by always questioning everything that is said? Do we never accept truth as truth, even when it's being read from the Bible? Do we have an issue with accepting what is being said? That all things are being manipulated, that preachers are something other than straightforward? And if not preachers, someone when the congregation is that way? And so you see what I'm saying, that we have that, all right? And so, when I go about this and we start setting up walls based in doubt or based the doubt of other people, that we have trouble. And so I think that we have listening walls in the United States of America. I think that we have people who don't hear women, people who don't hear children, people who don't hear certain ethnic groups, people who are political opposites, those that are poor or uneducated, that those are groups that people, I don't listen to those people. They don't believe what I believe. And that we take on a form of cynicism when we do that. That instead of hearing what is being said to me, and I prejudge, if you will, because of whatever that parameter may be. We laughed at Archie Bunker back years ago because he was worse than we are. That's what comedic effort is all about, is it exaggerates the situation, and he was the cynic of all cynics. He didn't believe in anybody, anything, always thought that everybody's against me and those things. He was so much more than the common man that he reflected the attitudes within our society. So, there's a sense. Do you think that we have brethren that don't get heard? And now that could be that they don't speak. And sometimes we need to stand up and speak. Sometimes that they don't get heard because we dismiss their thinking. And so, why would we do that? Would I dismiss someone because their attendance isn't high enough for me to listen to them on a religious subject? Would I do that to someone because of their lack of ability to express themselves in the appropriate level that I'm used to? Would we do that, you see, because they hold a different viewpoint from me? Would I do that to a brother? Do we eliminate widows or children along those lines? Do other cultural views make a difference? And I say that because I came from Albuquerque, in which many of the people that we meet, it's 67% Hispanic, and many of those are first generation Americans, meaning that they moved from Mexico into Albuquerque, and that their culture is actually still Mexican and not the United States and not American. And that what they emphasized versus what they do not emphasize, or that they, what they took issue with versus the other, became something that we had to learn about. So that they felt that they were part of us and not against us or not smaller than us, or that they don't belong or any of those types of things. It was a wonderful thing to actually have in your congregation people who do not speak English. Because communication then becomes completely different. And yet I want to say that I have some of the warmest moments that I can remember with people I can't talk to. Stop it. Anyone who's thinking ugly. Okay. They were warm toward us because they were invited and accepted and those types of things. There can be reasons, there can be action walls for cynicism, okay? That the synonym for the word cynic is pessimist, okay? And so do you view the outcome of what is to be done negatively to the point that many times I won't even begin? That's not something I can do. That's not what I assign to self as being able to. Are we skeptical, you see, that in such a way that we see little benefit in the ideas of others? That it takes my being on board for it to happen? Do we ever have the misguided idea that I'm right? That I'm right to the point that I doubt someone else? And so what others do must be checked on and verified. That what is said must be checked on and verified. And please, I'm not talking about making sure that we're speaking as the Bible speaks. I'm talking about when someone says something, we want to make sure that what was said is so, to the point that I have to check it. That I'm not satisfied unless I've done my due diligence on what's happened here. I call that in business micromanagement. And for those that have been in management know that that's not a good thing to have. It seems that way to yourself because I've got my finger on the pulse supposedly, but what you're also doing is undermining your confidence of your people. and what they think of you? Do you doubt, belittle, scoff, or quit when others' ideas or their work goes forward? And if we have these thoughts, I want you to understand, where they come from and the whys, I'm not going into that, but I want to make the point that if this type of thinking happens, sooner or later, you're going to state it. You're going to have to say something. And then that's where problems begin. So, in Luke 12, verse 3, it makes this statement. Accordingly, whatever you have said in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in the inner rooms will be proclaimed upon the housetops. And so the fact that we speak many times in a quiet place or to one person, sometimes that will circle back around and we have to face it. And so I just want us to get the idea that cynicism becomes a form of thinking if we're not careful. I don't believe that Christians are to be cynics. I don't believe that we're supposed to act that way. And do we believe that someone's just waiting to take from you what is precious? You see, that's the real basis of cynicism. Is that somebody is going to come try to take from me. They could take my possessions. They could take my well-being. They could take my confidence. They could take my family. And because of that, I'm protecting all the time those things. And so why do we hold... Okay, why do you hold to that kind of fear of other men over things such as this when God is in control? So God tells us something about that. In Matthew, the 6th chapter, beginning in verse 21, it says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body, so that if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is in you, if the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. For this reason, I say to you, do not be worried about your life as to what you will eat or what you will drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air, that they do not sow, nor do they reap, nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they? And you who are being worried can add a single hour to his life? And why are you worried about clothing? Observe how the lilies of the field grow, and they do not toil, nor do they spin. Yet I say to you that not even Solomon in all of his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown in the furnace, of how much will he clothe you, you of little faith? Do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing? So, when I make the statement about cynical thinking, that our thinking, basically, then our thoughts are going to revolve around our values. And if our values are relational, meaning about people and the welfare of people and the good things that can be done along those lines, if our thinking is about God and trust, would we live in fear? We will not live in fear. And so, we say that we love God, but then live in fear. What does that really say? Am I trusting God? Do I believe that God is in control? What do I believe under those terms becomes the question. I say one thing, and yet my heart says something else. So what would happen if you lost your possessions? Or your health? Or your family? And then I want you to ask yourself the question, of which of these was it promised that you would get to keep them? There was a time when certain things mattered to me, meaning possessions. I had an album collection that I loved. Good music, stuff that all handpicked. You know, I'm sure there are many of you that had some sort of collection along those lines of music that you really cared for, or something like that. And that you put it together, it was handpicked. And this is back in the days of albums that were actually albums, okay? Wasn't a CD. And so I would buy an album and I would take it out. I would handle it only on its edges, put it on my very good player, diamond needles the whole thing so that it's going to be just right, and immediately record it onto a tape. Put that album back into the sleeve and listen only to the tape until it crackled, and then I would go make me another one from my very pure album. And I listened thus to eloquent music of my choosing all the time. Hoo-hoo! A house fire robbed me of my record collection, and I was shattered that all that trouble I went to keep my records the way they should be went up in smoke, literally. That my goods burned, but my family was safe, taught me a lesson. That those albums didn't mean anything compared to my family. And the fact that we weren't there when it burned has, even to this day, that I received a great gift in the fact that my family was whole. And yes, a lot of things that we had that were part of the family, pictures and things along those lines, went with it. And all of that stuff I gladly let go of for the sake of the health of my family. And we recognize that. I think anyone would. The same is true for those of you that have any sort of a back injury. When that back injury happened the first time, and the first movement is, oh, that hurts. You will pay for whatever it takes to have that pain removed. And so I want us to understand, I had that one time I hurt my back, and I told Renee that if it were possible, I would marry my chiropractor. Because she took the pain away, and I was happy about that. Then comes the day when someone that matters very, very much to you is gone, and that you weren't expecting that, and we know that this day, I wasn't expecting that. How long were we promised to have the person or people that we love to be with us? Parents, how long, well, not parents, let's start with spouses. How long are you given your spouse? And the day is going to come, and it doesn't matter if that's a year or 60 years. In this case, 56 years. That your spouse is not going to be here. And how will you view that? That God didn't treat you well? That you had your companion and friend for 56 years and that you haven't been treated correctly? That your spouse is on loan, it's a privilege. It's not something that I can say that is my right. It's not. My children are the same way, that I've been given wonderful children of whom I love, and then grandchildren and all those things. And yet, you know, I'm not promised that they're going to be here tomorrow. I was never promised. And then I need to understand and get a handle on the idea that life isn't gone sour because death happens, because we've already been told that every man that lives will die. And we need to understand I'm not in control of that. I am in control of a relationship with God that gives me the power to understand these things and to live. And so that's my place. When I come to Luke, the 14th chapter, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother, his wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And we need to come to a realization of what that really means, you see. It is that we don't put anything before the living God, the one that has saved us, the one who has given all for us. We have to come there, and we have to recognize what's been done and the value of that and how good God is. And then we need to ask some questions. Are the Bereans noble? Acts 17:11. And these were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word with great eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. And God praised them for the verification of the scriptures, and understanding the will of God takes our own preparation. I must come to understanding. It is not that I read stories and that I understand there's some metaphors and that there's some things going on. It is that it will change my life and my value system and all that I am. And it is not that this life is doom and gloom, but things are going to happen. And that I will remain consistent and loving of my God and for my life every day, whether I can do what I did yesterday or whether I can't. If my backache doesn't go away, will I live? Yes. I made that choice a long time ago. Yes. Can I do what I used to do? No. But I can still do something. So that we're going to decide whether we will trust God, and then we have to decide whether I will trust men. Now, our society has a newscast system that teaches us you better not trust anybody because they're going to take advantage of you, and they're going to murder you, and they're going to hurt you, and they're going to steal from you, and they're going to do every other kind of mean thing there is. And then you have to decide whether men were made good or men are not made good. That people need to be believed in, that they need to be encouraged, they need to be lifted, they need to be loved. And the cynic cannot do that. That's a problem. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, beginning in verse 38, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the evil person, but whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. And whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. You have heard it that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends his rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Therefore, you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Who am I to be? I'm not to be the common man of what we see in the world that is being reflected, that this is the way you act and that you better be concealed carrying all the time because you're in trouble. And please, I'm not knocking that. The day has come, and I told you this morning in class, we're this far from being persecuted as Christians again. And it may be that we have to defend ourselves. And you need to measure what you think that should be. And there are plenty of people here that will talk to you about those things, about the right and wrong. But what I'm wanting us to see, that it says that we are to love our enemies, that we may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. I'm reminded of Philippians, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, that you may shine as lights in this perverse generation. And I'm asking you, how do you shine your light? And one of the things that I think is a light shiner is that we maintain our manner and our manners, if you want to put it that way, when we are under duress, that we don't yield and then say evil things and revile where we shouldn't and make unsubstantiated statements and do things that we shouldn't do. I think we are to remain calm, understanding that these things are going to come and that we are to stand in an even capacity. I think another one here is that we will greet those that should not be greeted. That we are not made afraid by an evil man, but we stand in the details of God. That I will extend my hand to those that are questionable. My fear keeps me from that. And I'm asking us, are we going to gain the courage to overcome our fear? Trust God. Galatians 6, 7 through 10 says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Though let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially those who are of the household of faith." That's not a cynical statement. That is a very positive statement of what the characteristics of Christianity are going to be and how we should act. That we greet men and do well for them as much as we can. Matthew 22, beginning in verse 36. "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment." We understand that. This room understands that. But then the second one is like it. "You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And on these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets." Now, putting that into play is something else. Okay, I understand it. But putting it into play where I don't become a cynic, where I don't let the circumstances of life that have damaged me and hurt me, and that I don't want to go there again, that I will allow myself to still be open to be hurt again. You see, that's what it's about. That no, I'm not going to close down and shield up. I am going to instead remain vulnerable and take some risk because God said so. And I want to ask you who you're going to be. So what am I going to do about cynicism? The next time the thoughts cross my mind, okay, who's going to try to manipulate me? Who's going to try to take advantage of me? I can't go in a car lot because they're going to try to take me. Especially a used car lot. No, I'm not going to believe that. Will you believe that your own thoughts, that men's souls are the same and that they need to be saved? And I'm going to be fearful because of it, or am I not? Am I going to choose to live here? Meaning in the ideas and the thinking and the turmoil that's here. Or am I going to elevate my thinking beyond that to God's thinking and see myself in a place that I can't arrive at without Him? That I can't become like without that example? Will I live for that next life and in the next life as if it is mine? Will you trust your brethren, you see? Will you be a cynic or will you choose to believe God? That's what it is. Am I going to become an optimist? What if you're a pessimist? Are you going to become an optimist? You're going to start looking at things and say it's all going to work out? Or are you going to continue with, I don't see how this is going to work out? We have to decide. Can I love my neighbor as myself? Now, God said yes. But I'm asking you in a very real way, can I do that? Or maybe we've become weary in well-doing, and I'm tired of trying. Are we going to yield to that? I think of those things, and I think about all of them, and think about the Beatitudes, you know, will we be what they are? And then I come to the place where it's really not about understanding anymore, because I understand. It is, will I do this? Will I do this today? And so, as we are considering again who we want to be, what is going to characterize the church and make us different from all those who claim themselves to be after God's own heart? It's going to be, I'm like God, and because I hoo-hoo on a regular basis and exalt God's name, but I don't. How will we separate ourselves to be recognizable to other men? It's they're different. They're different. And that difference is able to be seen and welcomed. I hope it will be welcomed. They're just questions for us. But may we put cynicism away and not become that. And let me assure you, all of you that are businessmen, especially management businessmen, you deal with cynical ideas on a regular basis. Are they going to own you? The church has nothing to do with that. And we have to escape it. And so I invite you to think about ourselves, to think about our lives, to think about our example. And then decide who we want to be. If you're not a Christian, we would that you would become one. Because there is no life like it. There is no direction like it. There is no reward like it. Both in this life and the next one. We would ask you to think about that. And if you decide that I want to be a Christian, do not wait. We're not promised tomorrow. And for us that have done so and have made our decisions, may we make a better decision for tomorrow than we have in the past. And if we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and sing?